Hey, Trojan fans, it's time to get into the huddle with the Peristyle Podcast. The Peristyle Podcast is your weekly ticket to USC football and recruiting news. Don't forget, you can download the podcast 24/7 at our website, peristylepodcast.com. And now, here's the host of the Peristyle Podcast, USCFootball.com publisher, Ryan Abraham.
Hello, Trojan fans. Welcome to the Peristyle Podcast. On a Wednesday, we're going to talk some USC Trojan football. We got fall camp in full swing. 8 practices are down. I guess 21 more to go. We want to talk with Dan Weber, and you guys have sent in a ton of questions for Dan. Today, over the last week or so, we got voicemail questions, text messages. We've got lots of emails. If you want to email us, send us a question, podcast@uscfootball.com, or you can call us at 424-254-9141. You can text us there, too. Leave a voicemail or send us a text. We do love to hear from you, and we did get a lot of questions from this first week of fall camp, and luckily Dan Weber was out there at every practice. We're going to talk to him about all of those. If you want to download the show, you can do it or subscribe on iTunes, itunes.com/Peristyle Podcast. We're on all the different podcasting platforms like Stitcher Radio and TuneIn Radio and Audio Boom and Google Play. So if you can't find us, just Google Peristyle Podcast, and you should be able to get us anywhere you go, any device you have. And we do appreciate all the feedback and all the positive reviews you leave us on iTunes and the other services. All right, well, we have so much to get to. We don't really have any time to mess around. We got to just talk to Dan Weber. What is up, Dan? How are you doing?
Doing pretty good. It's a hot and heavy week. 6 straight practices Monday through Saturday. I know Clay said he wanted to get it kind of into the game week rhythm. They're going to take off every Sunday. We got to go to a Monday workout that we don't normally get to see, which is kind of a very light, something like on a walkthrough basis. Heavy practice on Tuesday. So Clay's really about getting things as regular and as routine as possible. It really worked last year, and they're already in it this year. It doesn't quite seem as much like fall camp as this is a mock game week 4 or something like that, because they really like, this is our routine, this is how we're going to do it, whether it's fall camp or, you know, the week of the Texas game. You get a sense that it doesn't seem as much like camp. It more seems like we're already in season.
Yeah, it does feel like, I think, you know, it was funny, the element yesterday, Dan, that felt like camp when they were doing the calisthenics after practice. That felt a little more camp-like. But for everything else, you're right.
Yeah, and that was a shocker. Okay, that was out of the blue. I think they had a message that they wanted the freshmen to pick up, and they just decided, I think it was building a little bit, and I just think they figured this is a really good time to do this. So I think we were all, plus I think the players probably were just about as surprised as well. It was an interesting moment.
Yeah, it certainly was. Well, okay, so we have a lot of questions, so we're going to just have to jump right in. We're going to try to get to all of them. Hopefully we can. We'll try to do a little bit shorter stuff for some of our answers today. But let's start off with Tito up in Portland, Oregon. He said, first time writing the podcast and would like to say thanks for all the news updates on USC football. My 3-year-old son and I enjoy and always look forward to your podcast every week. Wow, that's great. I didn't know 3-year-olds listen, but that's start them early. I like that, Tito. He said, so my question for Dan is, how's the position battle between Marlon Tuipulotu and Josh Fatu going so far for the first team reps?
Well, I thought it was interesting. We mentioned that position yesterday to Clay, and he talked about Marlon, and then he talked about Brandon Peely, another freshman, a freshman who was not here early, 340-pound, athlete who can slam dunk a basketball, and he's really made waves. And then he mentioned Josh. So And I think your question? I might have been Shotguns was asking about Kenny Bigelow.
Yes,
and coming back from his two knee surgeries. But I thought it was interesting that they all mentioned Marlon first, and Marlon has been taking the first team reps. But Brandon is Keeley is pushing his way in there. So pretty impressive. We were talking to, I guess, Vianney yesterday, and we said, pretty different. You've got a couple of 18-year-olds in there now. Last year you had, and he said, yeah, we had an old man. You know, they had 25-year-old Stevie Tui Kalavatu in that spot, and now you've got two true freshmen that are kind of taking the first reps there. So, but yeah, I think Marlon is what he did this spring. He solidified himself with. He's going to be on the field. I don't think there's any question. He is a does not look like a freshman. Doesn't play like a freshman. So he's that was a great late switch to get him. You get the Oregon kid to switch from Washington. That's almost the perfect recruit because he ends up not playing, for either Oregon or Washington, and he ends up playing for USC. So you don't have to play against him. Recruiting doesn't get any better than that flip of Marlon.
Let's stick with the defensive line. We have a voicemail question. I believe this is the right one. Hopefully I'm right. Here you go.
Hello, fellas. My name is Al from Pennsylvania. I have three questions about the scrimmage. Was the offense that good, or does the defense need help physically? Two, did the offensive line blow away the defensive line? And three, did the quarterback have all day to throw? I hope all three answers are no, but I had to ask. Fight on and have a good day. Thank you.
Good questions from Pennsylvania. I think it was the first time we saw the offensive line really attack, and I thought that was good. I thought I would have given the nod on offense to the running backs. I thought they just had a really good day, and that's what you want to see. They were athletic. The offensive line was athletic, and so. That would, and it's again, it's kind of a one of those deals where it's a zero sum game, because if the offense plays great, do you say, oh, what's the problem with the defense or whatever? I think it was the first time that the offense had the advantage, against the defense. Are they giving Sam time? They are. Batting down some, he got two bat downs. So, time is a different, dimension when it comes to Sam, because, you just don't get to him. He's just, but I think they were close. And I thought that pass protection was pretty good. They don't take a lot of time. Now, this is not a team that is looking for, even when they throw the ball deep. What they try to do is they try to set you up with the run game, try to get you coming up to your secondary to come up and help, and then get somebody deep, but get them deep quick. They're not looking for plays that take a long time to develop. And I'm trying to think what was the third question, Ryan, about the line. I think it was in terms of the physicality. I don't think the offensive line is ever going to blow away this defensive line. I just think they attack them, quickly, smartly. But I think the big difference was the ability of the backs to take advantage of what they saw at the line of scrimmage. And it just was, a combination. Hey, they're pretty good. I mean, when you have the combination of Sam Darnold and Ronald Jones, and then you get a kid like Stephen Carr, who is a freshman, I mean, I think there will be people now arguing that, okay, he wasn't just the second best prospect in the country last year. He was the best prospect. So that's a pretty good load for that offense to throw at the defense, and it's really the first time they've had the upper hand. So so I think it was, that was a good day, and I don't think that was all that much of a negative on the defensive line or the defense in general, you know, in terms of their physicality. But it was a day that, you know, the defense has to say, okay, now what are we going to do, you know, to answer that? But, you know, I think I thought it was a good day for the offense to step up, but not one of those ones where, uh-oh, the defense is in trouble now at all. No, I don't think that was the case even a little bit.
Let's go to a text question, Dan. Brittany, class of 2012. Thanks for writing in, Brittany. She said, there's a lot of talk about the offensive line, but can you talk about how the defensive line is progressing, specifically how Rasheem Green looks? And she said she's interested as her dad wore number 94 when he was at USC. So cool, Brittany. Wow. Yeah.
Very cool. Yeah,
Darby. Darby is her last name.
Sorry about, he had to be class of 2012. Sorry about that.
Yeah.
when you get involved with USC football, the thing you do not want to hear is 2012.
Yes.
President Nakia stopped by practice the other day, and he mentioned the class, the 2012 season. So that's one that nobody's going to forget. In terms of the you know, Rasheem Green, he's you know, he's 275 pounds. He's leaned out a little bit. He's so athletic. I'm going to be interested to see if he you get the sense that this is the year he's going to really assert himself and you know, physically and make those kinds of plays that make you think, wow, look at but I don't know that they're exactly to the place that they want to be in terms of how they're going to you know, do some things. They're still, I think, really, you know, I mean, they know all the things that that they want to do with Clancy's defense. We don't always get to see them, because like yesterday, they lined up to give him an odd front look, you know, just because, you know, well, you're going to see this some this year, and we might not play it as much, but we may play it some and all that. So you don't always get an exact sense of how it's going to play out once the season starts, but he's I think his quickness is really apparent, and his technique. He's I think he's really been listening to Kenichi and really working on his hands, for example, and just doing all those things that you want to see a guy that's, you know, 6'5", 275, who just looks like you know, he could be as good a player as USC's had in a few years if he just really you know, steps it up in terms of just pushing himself and becomes that kind of a player. But I'm pretty encouraged about you know, where Rasheem could be this year.
Sticking on the defensive line, our buddy Nick in Cyprus, aka Big Nick 21 USC, says, how well has Kenny Bam Bam Bigelow played?
Well, I think, you know, he's missed an awful lot of time. He's had the two knee surgeries. He's shown an awful lot of leadership, I think. He's leaned out a little like Rasheem. He's probably 285, but he's not anywhere as big as he was when he came in at first. And I think it, you know, taking a little bit of time, you know, to get himself back into, you know, into the swing of things. And he's at a position where you've got, you know, those two freshmen we talked about, Marlon and Brandon. And then, you've got Josh Fatu. So it's a crowded position, at nose. And I think, you know, whether he, and when he, you know, comes back into, you know, say, okay, this is the Kenny Bigelow that, you know, coming out of high school was so highly ranked and all that. I think the thing that he does so well is he's been such a great leader. He was such a, you know, when he was injured and all the things that he does, you know, not in terms of the playing field, but just in terms of being on this team and being a mature, you know, guy who really has, his terrific leadership ability and all that. And I think, you know, they really respect him. They really like him. He just loves being a part of this, you know, program and, you know, in the school. And so, so we'll see. I mean, I just think it isn't going to happen right away when you've missed as much time as Kenny's missed. But you know, he's going to get his chance. And I think, you know, everybody is pulling for him to be able to really be a contributor. And I don't think that's out of the question at all.
We have our buddy Bearsecutor. He said, seems to me that Marlon Tuipulotu's trajectory as a freshman is rising faster even than BLW, so he's talking about Big Leonard Williams, did. Agree or disagree, and why? What would you say after observing the coaching staff for several seasons that explains Coach Pendergast's high regard for Coach Bradford? That's from Bearsecutor.
Well, I think Coach Pendergast and Coach Bradford worked together a couple of places, I guess the NFL and at Cal. And I just think it's one of those, you know, very comfortable situations. He knows what I want him to do. He knows what I need him to do. The personalities work well together. I think this is a big year for you know, for Coach Bradford to really show that you know, this is he's that the busts are gone, that the you know, that the coverage is, they're not giving up anything, and they're not going to give you, if you're going to score on this team, you've got to earn it. And obviously, you know, in games last year, the Stanford, I mean, we won't even talk about Alabama, but the Stanford game gave up a couple of busts for long touchdowns. The Utah game, there were some issues in coverage that probably cost USC that game on a couple of scoring drives. And in the Penn State game, you know, there were crazy plays, unusual plays, but there were things given up by the secondary that were like, wow, how did that happen? So I think it'll be interesting to watch that development in terms of, you know, Coach Bradford and how that all, how he works with Clancy's defense. As far as Marlon, boy, you're putting him in big company when you talk about his trajectory with Big Leonard Williams. There was an athleticism about Leonard that you can't coach, you can't teach, you can't, it just was there. A big man, that active, that able to just flow to the play. It's hard. And with Marlon, I'm not even talking about trajectory. Marlon was there from like day one. I mean, he just walked in the door and you thought, wow, look at this kid. He does not look like a freshman. I think the fact that he was the heavyweight wrestling, you know, super heavyweight wrestling champ and all that, he's got such a low center of gravity. His pad level is just great. But he's a different kind of player from Leonard Williams. In a different position. I think he's, you know, I just hesitate to put anybody in there. I mean, since I've been here, maybe Sean Cody, had as a freshman, you know, that same kind of, you know, impact with, that Big Leonard Williams had. If Marlon's even close to that, they have had a really, really, you know, wonderful recruiting, you know, year this year on the defensive line. And that's not counting, Brandon and Jay Tufele, who I think they also thought has, now, he wasn't here in the spring, but they think he's made some big, taken some big steps here recently as well. So however that works, Marlon's pretty good.
Sticking along that front seven, how is Oluwole Batiku and Connor Murphy looking, and do you expect both to contribute this year? That's from Tark.
Clay said jumped on Connor and said he was one of the two people that they came out of the scrimmage with Clay mentioning Uchenna, and which is pretty impressive considering Uchenna had a kind of an ankle thing that middle of the week. So for him to come out and look as good as he did, but the other guy he mentioned was Connor Murphy. Connor was just standing in there. He's got great ability at 6'7". It's not always that easy to stand in there and just really hold your ground. I mean, you're such a target, and for blockers. And he was quite impressive. Although Wally didn't get to go, he missed probably 3 days, I guess, with that turf toe. And I know it's frustrating to him. I know he was walking around the other day with the first time it happened with his shoe off and just not pleased at all. He was back yesterday, and I think, they've done what they've done other times and with a new shoe and a process, something. And with turf toe, there are no, perfect answers as to, this is what's going to happen. And it often happens to guys like Oluwole or Trey Madden, really strong, quick, strong, athletic guys who maybe put more pressure on that, on those feet and on those, toes than almost the body is designed to handle. And so we'll see. Oluwole's not where he wants to be yet, and probably not where they want him to be yet, and where they need him to be. So he's somebody that the next 4 weeks, I think, are going to be really important real important.
Let's see. Let's move to – we'll go to a text message again. This is from Brandon in Vegas. He says, how has Clayton Johnston looked at left tackle with the ones? Fight on from Vegas.
He looks like he belongs. I mean, he was kind of a lean, sort of a 280-pounder on a 6 foot. I think they listed him at maybe 6'5 last year. He said he's 6'6 now. So at 6'6 and 304, he looks like a left tackle at USC. He just looks like that guy. And he's been, he works like crazy. He's very serious about what he's doing. And I think, he's there to stay. Now, obviously, he's alternating with Toa Lobendon, who is alternating with Nico at center. And so they, when Toa's not center, he moves out and takes some snaps at left tackle. When Nico's not at center, he moves out and takes some snaps at right tackle. I think the way they're doing it, everybody's getting plenty of snaps because they're running a lot of plays. They've got a lot of bodies. They want to see a lot of kids do a lot of things. But I'm really impressed with him. I think he looks like and we saw him in the spring and he started catching your eye. And I know he said he was really working with the coaches, getting feedback. Just all of a sudden he's not the guy that we saw the first 2 years. He just is all of a sudden kind of grown up, grown into the position, and he looks like he belongs. So he's been a really the spring and then now he's been a real positive development for this program.
Let's see. Let's go to talk about Stephen Carr a little bit because we got a lot of questions about that. Do you see any Ezekiel Elliott and Stephen Carr? Clay Helton made that comparison in his recruiting press conference.
No, I don't as much. Stephen looks like, Ezekiel Elliott is just like this force of nature and just this, taken off from the, the get-go and just blasting through. I look at Stephen, and Stephen's more, I think, cerebral in terms of how he runs. He runs different ways. I mean, you'll see him take, three or four quick, very much under control, small steps. And then all of a sudden, he's got a chance either with a crossover or just, the seam opens out wider than it looks like. And so he just elongates his stride. And his ability to do that, to change the way he moves is, I think, fairly unique, that he can go and take it, you know, two different ways on the same run. I think DeLand McCullough yesterday was talking about, and I remember this in looking at his video, that Stephen was kind of an upright runner, and you know, fairly, who was it, the Rams, Dickerson, you know, was that kind of a guy. And now he's not. And I guess they had a long conversation, and they've been working on it, to cut down his profile and run lower and give less of a target and get behind his pads more. And, you know, from the first practice, in fall camp to now, he's changed the way he runs the football. I mean, that's almost, you just don't see people that can do that. But he's very much into, being coached. He's really a coachable kid. He listens and he reacts. And, it's amazing. I can't say how impressed, I am. I mean, you don't see kids who come out of high school who are super running backs who can also pass block and also catch the ball the way he does. And he already did those things well. And then to see what he's doing in terms of his running technique, he hasn't lost the ball yet, hasn't given it up in any way, shape, or form. He doesn't look like a freshman. And, he looks like a great recruit. You could not be happier with, somebody than USC is with Stephen Carr.
You mentioned, DeLand McCullough. Paul in Santa Clarita had a couple running back questions. First one was, what have you seen from Coach DeLand McCullough that made you say to yourself, I can see why he had so much success at Indiana? And if I'm not mistaken, Dan, his former running back at Atlanta is now going to be like the highest paid running back in the league, if I saw that right this morning.
Well, I missed that. I mean, obviously they like, he said, a series of those kids, 1, 2, 3. He's very believable. These guys, I mean, he sat down with Ronald Jones and they discussed, well, what do you want to do? How do you want to run the ball? How do you want to, where do you want to be? And they decided, I probably need to be 205 pounds. I probably need to be stronger up top. I want to be able to shed some people at the line of scrimmage. And, that's where Ronald is now. Ronald, said, hey, I think, I agree with you, coach. He has a unique way of talking to players, and he has a good way of having them be able to visualize things. I thought, yesterday Ronald had this terrific inside-out run off tackle for a touchdown from about 30 yards, and the only guy that got a hand on him was the safety. And they're talking about DeLand really works on visualization so that you already know when you're lined up where you're going to be at the second level, that you could see, okay, that seam is going to be there. And so now you're already thinking about where I'm going to be at that next level. The other thing we're seeing is they're hitting the holds quicker. Some of that is because the offensive line, you've got, smaller people, but quicker people, more athletic people. And it's going together really well, but he does drills that we haven't seen before, that really incorporate. They're not drill drills; they're game action, and they get guys to make full speed decisions while they're doing a drill that are very comparable to the kind of decisions that you make in games. But he has an expression: run through the trash. And he really, I think, has been, successful in his career in getting guys to run through people. I mean, just to, make the, he said he doesn't want them running on 100% instinct. He wants them, already to have a picture in their head before the ball is snapped as to how the play is going to develop so that, they're kind of rerunning that tape in their head. And it's not like everything's just happening, at the last second and they've got to, improvise as they go. He's, He's a good one. I you know, Clay did a, you know, for somebody that they didn't have any connection to, any history with, to come up with, you know, a guy who was a high school principal, you know, in Cincinnati at a charter school, at Inner City Charter School. He's just he's a terrific hire, and you just can't say enough good things about the land.
And it was my bad. It was that Devonta Freeman actually got the – he got a five-year extension at Atlanta.
Okay.
Tevin Coleman is the other running back there. So he's you know, he's obviously had
– I mean, he's going to be in the running for it, it looks like, after his freshman – you know, after his rookie season. He's going to be right there.
Yeah, he had it was his second season last year, and he had 8 touchdowns. So it was pretty good year for Coleman.
And that was with the Bears, right? Was he the Bears or was he the Atlanta kid?
No, he was the Atlanta, what? Yeah.
He's got one at Atlanta, and he had the probably the best rookie with the Bears last year, I guess. So he's had three in 3 years.
Oh, the other
one,
yeah.
Uh-huh. And I lose track of who all those guys are. I mean, when you get a kid, you know, when they were able to run the ball at Indiana, for example, you know, against people with far superior, you know, physical talent in that league, you know, he's doing something right. I mean, they're just, you know, they ran the ball against Penn State and Michigan and Ohio State. Now that's pretty impressive stuff.
The other question from Paul was, I recall in that summer of 2005, there was a buzz about how good Reggie Bush looked, and obviously he went on to win the Heisman. There seems to be some same type of buzz starting for Rojo this summer. Can you provide some comparisons between Reggie in the summer of 2005 and Rojo now? That's Paul in Santa Clarita.
Paul, that's interesting. Rojo and I had that conversation yesterday after practice. Because I said, you know, at 205 pounds, I said, you're probably exactly where Reggie was. I said, you're a little taller than he was. But I said, you really look like you enjoy running the ball up inside. And I said, that was the great thing. People didn't realize it. They started every practice on offense with Reggie running the ball up into the A-gap and just blasting up in there. He loved it. You know, didn't always do it that much in the games. You had, you know, Lindell, you know, to take care of a lot of that stuff. But I said, now that you're 205, you've got some of the same, you've got that ability off that one cut, that plant foot. And I said, I think, you know, you worked on your upper body stuff and, you know, being able to shed linebackers when you're going through and run through people. But I said, I think you've really, you know, you've really hit the weights hard. I think you've really got that kind of explosive one plant and push that Reggie had. And he said, were you here when Reggie was here? Did you get to see Reggie? And I said, yeah, every day at practice. And he was like really excited that, you know, there is something about when you mention Reggie Bush. But I think, you know, we're seeing some things. You know, it probably, like with Big Leonard Williams, with Reggie Bush, you probably should really restrain comparisons there. But he is doing some things. That the 30-yard touchdown that he ran in team run yesterday happened so quickly and was so, like, you know, and that was against the first defense. And it was boom, and he's gone, and there was nothing you could do. And the safety got a touch on him, but that was it. And that's when you start thinking, kind of seen that before. And obviously with Reggie, you had the pass receiving, you had the, you know, the return game and all that kind of thing. But there are some things about Rojo, that's 205-pound Rojo, who really seems to have taken to all the coaching that's there and worked on his hands and has made some big catches already, and that you say, okay, I don't think it would be terrible to make that comparison in those areas where it's legitimate. And there may be some where it really is, but he's working at it, and he's pretty good.
Keith in Oakland also want to know about Rojo's ability to catch the ball out of the backfield and pass block. What confidence do coaches have in his ability to do those things?
Much more confidence, because they've seen him work at it. They've seen him done an awful lot of work on the jugs machines in the summer. And he may have made the best catch of the fall camp, you know, to this point. So you know, that in traffic, I try to say it was like, it's, you know, inside the 5 yard line, stayed inbound, was getting hit all the way, and it just cradled the ball in with, you know, real soft hands up, you know, up against his chest and, in the, you know, in midair. And it was a play. It wasn't even possible to imagine that he could have made the first 2 years. So just the confidence that, you know, Sam had throwing it to him and the confidence he had that, you know, he would go up and get it. It just, you know, so he's a lot different and a lot improved. And, you know, I think there's a lot of pressure. I mean, Vivai Malapai and Stephen Carr catch the ball really well. Aka Cedric Ware catches the ball really well. I just think it was one of those, you want to be at every down back. If you want to be out there, you've got to catch it and you got to pass protect. And, I think, you know, that's the kind of thing a kid, you know, when he's going into his junior year says, you know, I gotta do this. I gotta figure out how, and I gotta work at it, and I gotta listen to my coach. And, I think all that's happened.
And then his other question was, who do you think most likely to redshirt this year? Who are the redshirt candidates?
I will defer to, Colin Cowherd, who is the well-known recruiting analyst, who is absolutely convinced that 12 of the freshmen are going to play. And I don't think anybody would have thought that coming in. I think people were thinking, you know, we don't really need, you know, if you're a USC guy, you're thinking, well, we don't need that many freshmen to play. Maybe, you know, they obviously Marlon after the spring was going to play. But, you just look around and you think they don't need to play, but probably they have to play just because of their, you know, ability and their potential, and that you know, you want to, you know, have that kind of a, you know, well-rounded team. I mean, I think people before yesterday's practice might have said, you know, Eric, we got two freshman tight ends. Maybe Eric Kromenhuk. And then he goes and runs a deep pattern yesterday and with three of the tight ends are not are out, and he runs this deep pattern, you know, for a 35-yard touchdown pass. And you thought, wow, he was going to be the Taylor McNamara guy, the tough blocking, you know, guy. And here he is, you know, getting deep and catching a touchdown pass. So I would say it's still a little bit early. Some obviously will. You know, red shirt. But I don't think, you know, I don't think probably attaching names to red shirts yet is the way necessarily to go. I just think there's enough fluidity, and, you know, injuries will be a factor. And, you know, those guys still have almost 4 weeks to step up and say, you know, you got to put me on the field. I think with USC now, the level of recruiting, let's say, of last year's class is such that you could make a case that, you know, a lot of these kids are going to be potentially three-year players and gone. So redshirting kids like that doesn't always help you. You know, maybe with Sam, you know, you could say, well, it's a good thing. He really had a good year as a scout team guy. You know, but then you look back and you say, gosh, so you're only going to have him for 2 years. So, you know, will Jack Sears, just because he's, you know, Clay was mentioning the other day that the fact that he does have a red shirt available will be in your mind when you're thinking, how do we structure the backup and all of that. But you could make a case that an awful lot of these kids are not going to redshirt. I think it's easier to almost make the case for the ones that aren't going to redshirt than the ones that are.
Yeah, I talked to Tyson Helton about Jack Sears a little bit, too. And it's funny. He said Sam Darnold has some impact on who's the backup quarterback, because that's part of, you know, a lot of what he's got to do is determine a backup quarterback. But like you said, it just seems a bit logical that Fink will be there and they can redshirt Sears. But Anything can happen. Who knows? We'll see. I'll have that up a little bit later today. My conversation with Tyson Helton. We got a couple quick ones from Tarek, Dan. Who do you see as the best candidates to be kick returners and punt returners?
Well, I think they were down to about four on the punt return yesterday, and maybe five if you count Teron Sidney got in there at the end. But Jack Jones and Velus Jones and Stephen Mitchell. And I'm trying to think, who was the fourth one? As far as I was concerned, I think it's Jack Jones and Velus Jones. I think Deontay Burnett, because of his sure-handedness, but I don't think you need him to take that pounding. I think you might do that if it's one of those ones where you really need, you know, you just want to catch it, and that's all you want to do. But I think it's the Jones boys, Velus and Jack would be my punt returners. I think they kind of like a Jenny Harris as a kickoff return guy. Just a real solid, gonna catch it and get the yards that are there. But I would think also you're gonna factor in Velus and Jack as just the home run hitters. I have more of a fix on the punt returners. The kickoff returners, you know, it's not as difficult as a catch, and you're not in traffic, and the ball's not twisting away and all that kind of thing. So I think the kickoff return is pretty wide open. Punt return, I think we're talking to two Joneses.
And then he also wanted to know, seems like Akili Ross is having a great camp. Think he'll see the field? If so, where?
I think slot to start with, a nickel. If they have to move a Jenny, let's say you need another corner and you decide, you know, the best candidate is a Jenny, and they would move a Jenny to corner, then I think Akili would be at the nickel. And he's a guy that they talk about as the classic he's got cornerback speed and he's got safety size. So he's that, you know, that guy that you could look at all three spots. And maybe they will as the year goes on. But yeah, I think he's got a determination about him this year that we haven't really seen. And he's a good athlete. He's a tough kid. And he'll be there somewhere. I think you'll see him somewhere. We see him, you know, he shows up on the radar now. And he didn't always do that. I think he really wants this. He said, you know, he's cleared his mind and he just goes out there and plays. And Jenny Harris has been a real mentor, you know, for him. And, he's the guy that everybody likes so much just because he was so darn athletic. And, you know, I know Gerard thought he was one of the best prospects that he's seen in a good while. So I think sometimes it takes a year or two, but I think this is, you know, this is the year you're going to see him somewhere.
Terry in Las Vegas wrote in, he said, last week you indicated the possibility that with so many talented receivers, we could see four or more receivers get playing time in games. I've often heard you and others explain how important it is for the quarterback and receivers to develop an effective rapport with each other. Is it possible for Donald to achieve that level of rapport with more than the two or three starting receivers? Thanks for all the great work, Terrian.
They run enough plays. I think they're getting enough in practice, I think. I mean, you still haven't seen like Josh Armada, baby. Still hasn't gotten a chance. You know, I'm still not 100% sure what exactly is holding him back in terms of, you know, physically. But I think we're starting to see some rapport with, say, a Jody Lewis, who made another just sensational catch yesterday, which it took Sam some real – you really had – I mean, Jack Jones was right there, and Sam had to really believe in Jody's ability to catch the ball. I think Jack Jones just was, after the play was over, just said, what a heck of a catch, and way to go. And it was. So I think that's starting, you know, to develop at, you know, at that next level of guys. He clearly, I think, has that, you know, obviously with Deontay. I think Tyler Vaughn started with it this year. He was right there, and they believe that, and I think with Jalen Green. So that first group that they've been running in there, and then you almost have to count Michael Pittman as part of that group. So now that's four, and if Jody Lewis, becomes five, and then what they're trying to do is develop the long ball ability of Velus Jones to get behind people. And he's made a couple of big plays where you really got to be, on the same page with the quarterback. So yeah, I think they do have the ability. I think he could get six guys pretty much in sync with Sam. But they have to work at it. It takes time. They got to do it in practice. You've got to incorporate those long play, those long bombs. And that takes some doing because it takes a little bit out of everybody. It takes time. But I think you can see them devoting the time, to getting that, getting those guys all on the same page. And, I think we are seeing that happen. Yeah. And I don't think it's just limited to the, there is so much, shuffling of guys in and out and, rotation that I think the concept of just two or three guys is kind of, for USC football, it's kind of out of date. I think it's probably never going to be just two or three guys, or it shouldn't be. They need to run enough plays and give them enough chance that you get, four or five, maybe even six guys that you're really, comfortable with, and so is Sam.
We got, Jason in Longhorn Country. It's a little long. He said, thanks for all the great work. This email's for Dan. After Friday and Saturday's reports, I'm starting to get concerns about our defense. Rojo's two-play score from the 10 on Friday, Rojo's 25-yard touchdown run without being touched, and all of Carr's touchdown runs on Saturday seem to imply a lack of physicality and discipline / gap integrity by our defense. With our offense running the ball with such ease, it seems that this would be cause for concern when playing a team like Stanford, who I assume we'll have a better offensive line than ours. In addition, the fact that our DBs seem to be losing 50-50 balls to our receivers is also concerning. When looking at Texas, they might have the best deep ball passer in the country. When you combine that with their 6'6" athletic receiver and Colin Johnson, it appears this could be a McSorley / Godwin nightmare all over again. I was talking about Steve Buschel. That's the Texas quarterback. Stanford and Texas appear to be easily losable games if our defense does not pick it up. I'd be interested to get your thoughts. Thanks again. Fight on. Jason in Longhorn Country.
Man, Jason's going to be a long 6 weeks, I think. Just because Stephen Carr makes a really good run or Rojo is able to power it in doesn't mean that the defense is going to If they didn't do that, you'd be worried about the offense. So I would take that. I tend to look at it as I look at it on the positive side that the offense was asserting itself. Are there some issues that the defense has to clear up? Yeah, absolutely. I think when they go into games, where you've got a really specific game plan. I think that's a different situation from what we see, on the practice field, because they don't turn them loose in the exact same way. You don't coach them up in the exact same way that you would, for a game and you would, shut somebody down. The fact that Stephen Carr, makes this miraculous crossover transition step, and instead of going one way, he's going the other way. That's one of those, okay. It happened. It wasn't like it was, that Saquon Barkley run where he ran through, seven missed tackles. It was quick and a quick hitter. And Rojo is going to make those kind of runs every once in a while. I mean, he just, he's that good. So I look at it more that way, but yeah, are there things that, say a Porter Gustin, can work on in terms of, playing the edge? Yeah, absolutely. Are there, linebackers who sometimes get caught up looking one way and maybe don't get there. But, for example, yesterday, they threw the ball deep middle from about 35, I guess, and I'm trying to think who the receiver was, just about to cross the goal line. Here comes the ball, and all of a sudden, a guy comes and knocks the thing down, and I'm thinking, wow, is that one of those freshman safeties? A big kid, 6'4", who was, or, you know, at least it looked like it. And then you realize, no, that was Cam Smith. And you're thinking, wow, he's not running like he ran last year. He's running like, well, I don't even know if he ran like that as a freshman. But so there are signs that you really are, you know, can be positive about, you know, with the defense. And so I would not worry about, you know, that any of those matchups. I think the thing at USC, you want them to have an advantage going into those games with Stanford and Texas, for example, is you want the USC offense to really be able to assert itself. And you want it doing the kind of things that it's doing. And to the point where Stanford just can't score with you. And you don't want Stanford to be able to just play their game, but make them play your game, which is why you want to see this, you know, high-powered offense that Stanford can't keep up with. I think the Texas matchup, I do think they've got some, you know, athletes, and especially in offense, and the tackle and the quarterback and the big receiver. But I think the Texas matchup problem is Texas's defense. If I were going to worry about a defense in the Texas-USC game, the defense I'm worried about is probably the Texas defense. I just think after you watched them last year, I just don't know how that defense can be better enough to play against this USC offense. So that's what I would try to go that route, and maybe if that would help me get some sleep in Longhorn Country, worried about how this game's going to turn out. I think the matchups are pretty good in USC's favor. I really do. I think the defense will be enough to stalemate people, and I don't think you're ever going to see the combination of craziness that happened in the Rose Bowl. I mean, you could easily, you know, have a scenario where Penn State scored four fewer touchdowns. And, you know, they only got, I think that's the thing people don't realize. USC ran 88 plays in the Rose Bowl. Penn State ran 62. So, I mean, there, you know, without the flukes and the crazy bounces and, you know, a call or two and some of the stuff that happened, you know, it would not have been a dramatic finish. It would have been, you know, a pretty one-sided affair. But I doubt that's going to happen again. There was stuff happening in that game you may never see again. And so I would not worry.
That was on Velus Jones. So Cam Smith came all the way back. I got tweets about that too, Dan. They're like, why is Cam Smith covering, you know, Velus Jones? It's like, he wasn't the main cover guy. He was helping out, you know, and he got all the way right back there. So it was kind of good.
Yeah, you can look at it both ways. You can say, oh, where was the safety? But the second thing you can look at, so this is me. I look at it and say, wow, you got a middle linebacker that can get 35 yards deep and knows where the ball is. So that's where I'll take that out of it and let them figure out what happened to the safety.
Yeah. Let's see. We got one from Stephen Poway. He said, hey, Ryan and Dan, or Keely. By the way, it's great to have Keely on board full time. She's a great addition to the team and does a great job with post-practice interviews, etc. Fight on, Keely. Yeah, thanks. So Keely's been doing a good job. We'll try to get her back in studio for the podcast. It's been a little nutty during fall camp, but we'll try to do that on a regular basis. But
Keely still has to work her way through after practice, signing all the autographs. Yeah. And, you know, she does have a following now, I'll say that. And she's so good. And, what a pleasure to get to work with Keely after practice.
Yeah, she's been great. So we're happy for her. She's now a graduate and, doing work for us. So we're happy about it. But he said, it seems obvious that if Jack Sears ends up as the number two quarterback on the roster, that he would likely join a ton of other true freshmen and play this season. However, the more difficult decision would be if he's listed at number three, but without a lot of separation between him and Matt Fink. Say they are listed as or on the roster, which I could see that being the case. It's USC. Given the likelihood that Sam Darnold will leave for the NFL after this year, do you think it would make sense to burn Sears' red shirt in case and play him in this season so we can have that experience for next year? And does JT Daniels' recent commitment for the class of 2019 change the equation at all? Have you heard any inklings from either Coach Helton on this? Stephen Poway.
Well, I think that not the JT Daniels. You can't talk about that. But the inkling that we got was that that Jack might be a candidate to redshirt. That they're thinking that, I mean, they felt like Sam got as much out of that redshirt where he was a scout team quarterback. It certainly didn't hold him back, you know, from stepping in when he did, and you know, as a redshirt freshman last year. So I think if you look at that model, they're probably thinking there's an awful lot to be said to have the kind of freshman year that Sam had, where every day you're going against the first defense and going hard and making plays, and Sam did, and I think they might look at that as a better model for getting, say, a Jack Sears ready than a model that would have him, you know, doing some mop-up duty, but not necessarily, you know, getting the kind of, you know, critical on-the-field, in-game experience. So USC hasn't been very good. I mean, USC's done a better job of working with the scout team guy and getting him ready than it has in the mop-up guy during games. So right now, if you had to bet, you would think that, and again, this is completely, and they are very trustworthy in terms of who deserves it based on practice play. This is not a team that maybe determines how much time you get on the field by how they recruited you or where you were from or what your, you know, clippings are, all that. That recruiting does not factor into this. This will basically be a performance issue. And if push comes to shove, my guess would be, let's say they're really close, my guess would be Matt's used his red shirt and Jack hasn't, and Jack would be the guy who would get all the snaps with the you know, with the scout team. But again, that can change. They're still, you know, 4 weeks, and I think they're still going to count those first 3 weeks of home games as a time when freshmen get a chance to prove themselves. So there's a lot of time, you know, for them to, you know, factor this all in and figure it out. And but that would be, I think, the way things are kind of leaning right now.
Speaking of redshirting, Anthony L.A. says, "Hello, Peristyle. Great work, you guys. It's great to see and hear you on a daily basis. The excitement and national attention this football team is getting in the media. Dan, we have a very talented freshman class who came in, and it's been almost a tradition with this staff to recommend redshirting these new players. But I seriously believe that the Trojans would be doing themselves a disservice if that happened. Stephen Carr, Joseph Lewis, etc., especially with a college football playoff or bust bar that's been set. What do you guys think?" So I think we kind of talked about this, but Anthony in L.A., I thought you'd get a chance to react.
Yeah, they're not going to – I mean – it's interesting, all the interest in redshirting. I mean, I know people, you know, get invested in these freshmen, and I don't blame you. And you haven't seen them, but you know about, you know, you kind of get a real sense about them. And I'm glad that's what we're trying to do. I'm not looking at redshirting a lot of those guys. I mean, there are a lot of freshmen that you just mentioned their names, and you think, you know, I think like a hard call might be, let's say Randall Grimes. Do they have enough receivers? You know, last year you had the four seniors, or you've had the four guys who were on their way out, and they were going to get their shots. And there were some, you know, true freshmen who redshirted last year who probably wouldn't redshirt in most other years. Are there guys like that? You know, maybe. I don't think redshirting right now is something that they're really thinking about. I think they're trying to think, you know, who has to be in the rotation, who has to, who could help us win football games this year? And I think that's the thing they're most thinking about. And I just don't think they've gotten to the point where they're really focused on how the redshirting is going to go. I just think it's, who can get on the field, who can get in the rotation, give them enough time to have a real opportunity, and then go from there. But I just don't think that's a big consideration right now in terms of the redshirting. It is a quarterback, but after that, I just think letting it go.
And that, just to follow up on the Jack Sears stuff, talking to Tyson Helton about it yesterday, the backup, that role, it's an important, role, and you want to get some experience. And to be fair, and I asked them about this, USC's been fairly horrible about getting the backup quarterback experience.
Yes, they have.
They've been really, Max Brown, it was such a disservice that he'd never had any real playing time. So he said he said that's always the goal. That's what you want to do. But if people feel like Jack Sears is going to be the guy next year, but Fink's ahead, which I still think he is, I don't think they're going to remove the red shirt just because of that. I mean, they'll try to get whoever the backup is playing time. Right now it'd be Fink. And he said that's the goal, but just historically, USC's been really bad at that, Dan.
Right. It hasn't been the greatest deal to be the backup quarterback at USC. That doesn't necessarily, you had to chart it. Sam Darnold had a far better year as a freshman redshirt running the scout team than Max did as a backup. And if you had to choose between the two, you'd have said, gee, I'd rather be Sam. He really got to do some things and got better. So, I don't necessarily know that, it would be, but you do want somebody who's maybe a little more mature, a little closer. I mean, they really have a lot of decisions to make in terms of if you're the quarterback at a pro-style team that runs tempo, you've got to do so many things at the line of scrimmage. And they have developed more and more to Sam's skill set. So, for example, the way the offense is running now, there are so many, decisions that the quarterback has to make, at the line of scrimmage. And that's asking a ton from a true freshman. That's really, really, really asking a lot. And you probably wouldn't want to try to go back too far from that if you have to put somebody in there. So I do think maybe the transition is a little bit easier. For Matt, who has grown up, he has gotten bigger and stronger, more mature, and he's been in the system. Maybe at the start of last year, it wouldn't have been as much of a deal for a true freshman because they weren't asking as much, from the quarterback at the line of scrimmage. But the way last year evolved, it just, became more and more, evident that, that they wanted the quarterback to a lot of things at the line of scrimmage because Sam could do it, and that worked best. The next guy in line, it's going to be a challenge to be able to, replicate that as much as possible. A real challenge, even for a very talented freshman who was here in the spring. It still would be, that's asking a lot.
Let's see. We'll do a voicemail question, Dan. Here you go.
Hey Ryan, this is Sir Eric of Troy from Rancho Cucamonga. I've got a question for you or Dan Weber. I received an email from the sports radio saying that they will no longer have an affiliation with USC football this upcoming season. I'm wondering what happened because I really enjoyed listening to Arbogast and the guys up in the booth on the sports radio during the game. Is there going to be something to replace that, or are we just going to do without from now on, or what? I was really disappointed when I heard that. So I was wondering if maybe you could shed some light on that for myself and the other listeners who will be affected by it. Thanks a lot. Fight on, guys. Looking forward to seeing you this season.
I've heard this. We haven't followed up on it. I really don't know what that means.
I'm not sure what the sports radio means. Like, what is the sports radio? Like, it must, maybe it's a local station where he is, because they, you know, like, they're still going to have it on 710 in Los Angeles, but maybe the station in his local market won't be carrying it anymore, because they used to have a whole bunch
of stuff. I don't know. USC had a deal with ESPN nationally, a national sports radio deal. And I don't know if that's affected. We'll follow that up today and find out. But I heard this once before from somebody else, that something changed about, you know, the radio situation. I don't think it's changed at all, you know, for the, you know, 710 and the flagship station and what have you. I don't know if there are, you know, did one station drop out in the network, or is there a change in the way ESPN structures it nationally? Don't know, but we'll find out. That's a good question, and I don't know what it means for you, Sir Eric. I really don't.
Yeah, a little more specific. I wasn't sure, but we'll try to find out what's going on with that. If they cut back on some of the stations, I'm just not really sure. You know, I remember hearing something actually, Dan, last year about they might have been adding more fees, or like, you know, there's other markets like Palm Springs. There's other places that would carry the USC games, and maybe it costs more, so some of those stations are dropping it. We'll try to find out what's going on with that. John and Brea, he said, as a fan, after seeing the video Stanford put out, I have the Stanford game circled, and I'm sure Clay Helton does too, but certainly wouldn't admit it. Do you get a sense that Clay is past all that, quote, we want to be like Stanford stuff from the beginning of the season last year? Sometimes I feel Stanford is baiting USC into trying to beat them at their own game. Do you think Clay believes the Trojans can beat Stanford by being USC? Thanks and fight on, John and Brea.
Yeah, he'd better. He better believe that. I mean, there were some good things about the good thing, I mean, that you liked about Stanford is Stanford beat you by being Stanford. They knew who they were and how they did what they did, and they believed in it completely, and they just always, you know, felt like it's going to work out. And for all kinds of reasons, you know, in 7 of the last 9 years, it has. But, I mean, I think USC goes into the Stanford game and should go into the Stanford game saying, you can't beat us. We're better than you. We've got more weapons. And we're going to be, you know, able to do what we do better than what, you know, what you do. And we match up better. That attitude hasn't existed. I still don't think they understand, that first year when Sark went into Stanford and USC ended up winning and what was it? Stanford was inside the 36 different times and didn't score. And, you know, so even the one game USC won, it was like, gee, how do we do that? I think Stanford's the perfect, you know, game to set the tone and say that, you know, we are not going to let you, you know, what you do isn't going to be good enough to beat us with what we do. And your athletes aren't good enough to beat our athletes. Do we have to be as smart as you? Do we have to be as, you know, as tough as you, as physical as you, as well coached as you? Absolutely. And then we're going to be better. We're going to have more players who can do more things. I mean, I think that's got to be the attitude. But, you know, it's not that you want to be Stanford. You want to be USC and dominate, because you're USC and that you know who you are and how you play. I mean, a big part of, you know, what's been happening, obviously, USC, you know, didn't have enough players always, and didn't have enough continuity in the coaching. And they didn't have a sense of who are we. I mean, who was USC, you know, when Pete was leaving? Who was USC? Who were they with, you know, with Lane? Who were they with Sark? You know, it wasn't like, okay, this is USC football. Well, what is USC football? That wasn't that clear. Even last year, I went into that game very tentative, very much like, boy, can we stay on the field? You know, they've got Christian McCaffrey. You know, we don't. It was the wrong attitude. That game may have been more disappointing even than the Alabama game, I thought. It was an eminently winnable game, And it just, there was a feeling after that Stanford game, like, you know, the air had really gone out of the balloon. I mean, it was just poor. The good news was it forced, you know, what happened with Sam, with his team, the way they practice, the way they do what they do. And this is completely not the team that played Stanford at Stanford last year. And you hope that they understand and show Stanford that this isn't the same team. This is, now we're, you know, we are saying, you know, the USC kids saying to themselves, we are USC. This is who we are. This is how we do it. And we'll see who comes out of this game. But, I mean, it's great to have that game, second game of the year. I mean, it's just, it's going to tell you an awful lot about this team, these coaches, and, what they've put together. And it ought to be good enough, but, saying that, you got to do it. And we'll see. But will they have forgotten that game, or will they? No, they're going to see that video, I'll guarantee you. They're going to see that video. And David Shaw, I asked him about it at the Pac-12 Media Day, and he was pretty good about sliding off of that. I don't think they, you know, people who covered Stanford were like, wow, how did you see that? Where did that, you know? And I said, well, they put it out. I mean, it wasn't something that somebody else put out. And it was about Stanford. They were trying to say, this is who Stanford is. This is who we are. But they used the USC game as an example, as the example. And I think USC will use that as the example about, this is not who we are. And we'll be a different team when we play this year. That Stanford game is, I think it's a big game for Coach Shelton. Big, big game for them to go in there and say, you know, this is our program, this is how our program works, and this is how we stack up, you know, against the Stanford that's had a lot of years under, Harbaugh and David Shaw to become the kind of program they are.
We got one last one for you, Dan. And we actually had other kind of, I put in the generic question box. They weren't for you specifically, so I'll try to get to those later in the week, or we'll get to those at a different time. But we had so many this week, we wanted to make sure we got all the ones. At least we're addressed to Dan. He said, this is from Dan also. He said, thanks to Dan for his memories about John McKay. Coach McKay used to hang out after practices at Julie's, an off-campus restaurant on Figueroa that used to be where the Credit Union building is now. John McKay had his own table and would draw plays on the tablecloth, and he was accessible to anyone. Does Coach Helton or any of the assistant coaches have a hangout on or around campus? And also, Coach McKay started coaching at USC in 1960 when it was still single platoon football with two-way players. In 1962, when he won his first national championship, we had three platoons, one for offense, one for defense, and one that went two ways because you could substitute a player once a quarter. This innovation helped to start the two-platoon system. Do current coaches do anything that could be considered innovative? Thanks and fight on. Dan from USC class of 1962, and he said, thanks for all the Trader Joe's radio ads. You have some of the humorous ones. Yeah, I'm not sure.
Well, like, you know, I'm always fascinated, and I know we've heard those stories of being at Julie's after practice, and I'm thinking, here we are after practice, and we're just thrilled to death if we're out of there by, after writing, we're out of there by, 10 o'clock, and we're thinking, gosh, that's great. And you do wonder, because you remember that, the writers used to go over there and hang out at, at John's booth and all that. And it just must have been a simpler time, in terms of how everything worked, because it's hard to visualize how that would work today. First of all, if you were a coach, you couldn't trust most of the media anyway, if they were sitting at your booth. It's just a different world. And secondly, we really don't have the time, I don't think. But it's just fascinating to read about, read those stories and how that was just such a different time. In terms of the innovation, yeah, I remember back in those days, LSU had something they called the Chinese Bandits. They had, an offense and a defense, and then this third group. And teams were doing things to try to you know, when they were going from single platoon to, you know, two-way players, to dividing up the platoons and all that, you know, it was an interesting time to be, you know, part of that. In terms of innovation for this group of coaches, I think they're going to, the way they're going to run the offense, I think with a lot of the principles that Tyson Helton brought with him from Western Kentucky, and I think that Jeff Brohm, who just got the Purdue job, was kind of a cutting edge offensive coach. And some of the things that Western Kentucky has done, you know, they went two straight years in the top 25, which is absolutely impossible for somebody like me who grew up in Kentucky and knows, you know, what Western Kentucky, you know, has in terms of, you know, a football program. They are doing some great things. And I think the blending it with what in terms of T. Martin and how he sees the offense and all that, I think you will see, I mean, just the offense that scored 52 points against Penn State, against a really good good defense, athletic, you know, active, really well coached. That's the kind of thing I think you're going to see, you know, and the ability to both run the ball and pass it and to make things work one off the other and all of that. I think that may be, you know, the way this team will be remembered, this USC maybe staff. Basically, quarterbacks. You've got, you know, Clay was a quarterback, T was a quarterback, Tyson was a quarterback. And so you've got a lot of quarterback minds, and they are very fortunate that they have Sam Darnold to make it work. And so, you know, I think that might be the one place you're going to see them advance the game of football. You know, they're still going to be pro style, but they're going to have a lot of up-tempo spread elements, and so it's kind of a hybrid, offense. And so I think if I had to say one thing is going to you pull out and say that's what they do a little differently, that's what they do a little differently and a little innovatively, and people will start looking at it and saying, you know, maybe we need to try to do some of that ourselves.
All right, Dan. Well, hour and 17 minutes or so, and we didn't even get to all everything that, but yeah, good stuff. I mean, so many questions, so much going on at USC fall camp. But thank you for coming on and spending some time with the folks before we head out to practice a little bit later this afternoon.
Yep. A lot of questions because, I mean, that's what fall camp's about, answering questions, and they're not all answered yet, but, everybody's got them.
Yeah.
So, this is where we are.
I would say most aren't answered yet, but there's, you know, we're getting some information from out, you know, out there and observations and seeing how things turn out. The one thing, I'll kind of leave you guys with this. I talked to Chris Brown yesterday. I should have a story coming up too. And, just tried to, you know, get him off the record afterwards a little bit, just chatting about the positions, because right now you have him at left guard. You have Vianney Talamaivao at right guard. That's pretty set. Chuma Doga most likely is going to be the right tackle, you would say. So like three positions set, but there's three players kind of for the other two. Clayton Johnston, who's playing left tackle. Toa Lobendon, who's playing left tackle and center. And then Nico Fala playing center and right tackle. And, you know, Nico Fala was the starting center for their 9-game winning streak. You would think he would just be the center, but, you know, he's not been the regular center. They've been kind of going back and forth. If he doesn't end up being the center, I don't see him supplanting Chuma Doga at right guard, at right tackle. He's likely out. I don't think where's he going to go? He's not practicing anywhere else. Where like Toa Lobendon, if he's not the center, he'll likely be the left tackle and Clayton Johnston would be out. But, that's kind of one really interesting thing to watch. I thought maybe Monday, Dan, that they would kind of solidify things a little more, but it's still that kind of rotation. Has that surprised you? Like, I'll give you this parting shot before we get off.
Well, I think they are just so focused on they want a veteran senior center, and so they are absolutely not going to be caught. And we talked a lot about Stanford; they're not going to be caught in that situation, you know, with with Cyrus Hobby, I guess, was, if you remember, when he got inserted in that Stanford game a few years back, and, you know, wasn't a regular, hadn't played there, and, you know, essentially just having somebody new at one position cost them the game. They're not going to do that. They're going to have either Nico or Toa at center. And Toa, you know, Nico's had some back issues. Toa's had the knee issues. And so they're going to, you know, have both of them train like crazy there. I think they're handling it well in practice. It doesn't seem to be any kind of a distraction. I think Vianney's in the middle of that. And he said, I don't know until we come out, you know, and they don't even huddle. But he said, I might have Nico on one side or Toa. And on the other side, I might have Nico. And he said, you know, they've been playing together for 4 years and, no big deal. They just feel like, I think that the way they're approaching it, it is no big deal. It's just they are bound and determined they're going to have a veteran center and somebody that's in charge. And Nico and Toa both are perfectly, you know, suited for that role with all their experience and their personalities. And then they're going to figure out everything else from that. But, I like the idea that they're, you know, we are not going to have an inexperienced center this year. We're not going to, you know, put us in that position. And they're doing whatever it takes to make sure. And the way they're doing it, I think they're doing it really well. It sounds like, gosh, is this going to work? But, they're going to have an experienced center. And that's the key. And they seem to be able to handle it. I mean, you don't get any, I mean, I, you're not seeing, I mean, last year we saw busts in the line of, at the line of scrimmage. We saw unblocked guys. We're not seeing that this year. We're seeing hats on defensive linemen and linebackers. And that wasn't the case last year. So I, you know, from what I can tell, they look like they're handling this really well. So.
The only concern would be then, Dan, is if it's Fowler that's going to be the center, are you worried that Lobendon's not getting enough left tackle time? Because that's not where he's played much.
Yeah, I mean, I think, we saw it, you know, you have almost 4 weeks, so there's still plenty of time. And you would also think, you know, is there another place for Nico that he hasn't been working at if you decide, well, you know, absolutely Chuma. And I think Clay said the other day that Chuma had, you know, best practice he's ever had at USC. So, you know, you don't think you're going to have him, you know, off the field. You know, is there a spot at guard, you know, for Nico, you know, if he's not at center? Is there, you know, a guard spot that he hasn't been working at? You know, how do they do this? I don't know. I like what I'm seeing of Clayton Johnson. There's no question about that. And is there another spot for Toa? You know, I think the question would be, whichever one doesn't start at center, is there another spot other than two tackle spots? Because if you end up saying, "Well, I really like what Clayton Johnson's doing, really like what what Chuma is doing," or if you say, as Clay said, even after the first three games, maybe Austin Jackson and Andrew Voorhees are able to challenge, for a couple of those spots. I think we may be seeing, a mix and match situation that kind of goes through the whole year. That eventually they get enough reps at wherever they're going to end up, and that by cross training and all of that, they like the idea of cross training, and they think that's a plus. So. It's different. We haven't seen this before. So, I don't know that I've ever remembered a team where you have two centers. That's usually kind of locked in. We'll see how this goes. It's kind of interesting.
All right, Dan, great stuff. I just added another 7 minutes to our podcast. Sorry, but I wanted to talk about this. But thanks again. We'll see you out there later on.
Yeah, there's an awful lot to talk about, so we won't hesitate to talk.
All right. Well, that's Dan Weber. I'm Ryan Abraham. I hope you guys are enjoying all of our USCFootball.com coverage. Tons of it. Putting up lots and lots of content on the site. Hope you guys are enjoying it, and we will talk to you next time.
You may have noticed that shopping at Trader Joe's is unlike shopping at other markets. People ask us all the time how we manage to have such unique, interesting, and delicious products at such great everyday prices. This is Dan Bain of Trader Joe's. The answer is simple. It's all in the way we do business. We buy directly from the manufacturer whenever possible. This helps to keep our costs low, and we pass those savings on to you. No gimmicks, just great values at honest prices every day at Trader Joe's. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to the Peristyle Podcast, presented by USCFootball.com. Be sure to tune in next week for the latest news on Trojan football and recruiting. Don't forget, you can automatically download the podcast directly to your smartphone or tablet for free. Just click the iTunes link on PeristylePodcast.com or search for Peristyle Podcast at the iTunes Music Store.